Squad Cars. 11:20 p.m. on the 25th of June. The control room of Synchro Burglar Alarms, PTY Limited. The controlman, Ken Prinsloo, is making himself a cup of coffee. Suddenly, lights flash on the control panel, throwing a relay. The controlman turns and regards the panel. He turns in time to see the decoder rattle out three figures on the roll of paper fed into it. Quickly, he moves to the filing system and turns up the number indicated on the control panel. Then, he dials a phone number.
Hello.
Mr. Lazard?
Speaking.
Synchro Burglar Alarm's here.
What, again?
I'm afraid so.
Look, you got me up three times this week for nothing.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Do you want us to report the alarm to the flying squad, or shall we send a serviceman?
Send a serviceman. Tell him to please find out the fault. I'm sick of this every night. Please, don't bother me no more.
At 11:23 p.m., the controlman reaches out and throws a switch on the control panel. This is the company's two-way radio.
Hello, Des?
Yeah?
Where are you?
Just passing City Deep on the way back to town. I fixed up that false alarm in Germiston. It was the branches of a tree catching the wires in the wind. What's up now?
It's the Capricorn Discount Company.
Again?
Yeah. Old Lazard wants us to see if we can find the fault.
Okay, I'm on my way.
PM. Desmond Faraday parks his van in President Street outside the building housing the Capricorn Discount Company. He expects to be greeted by the Bantu night watchman in the foyer of the building, but there's no one about. From recent experience, he knows that there are closed circuits on every other floor except the sixth. When he steps out of the lift on the sixth floor, he's challenged from the darkness.
Who's that?
A serviceman from Synchro Alarms. Who are you?
Mr. Lazard asked me to have a look at the place on my way home from Bicester, just to see if everything was okay.
I see. Is it?
Oh, it seems to be. Everything's locked up and secure.
Well, there's a fault somewhere. Just have a look around and check it over.
You snooping swine! And very bright were you, Mr. Synchro.
AM on the 26th of June. The Synchro controlman, Ken Prinsloo, calls up his colleague, the serviceman, Des Faraday.
Hello, Des? Des? Desmond! All right. Try ringing him.
Left already.
But if he had, he'd have reported in. No, something's up.
Police, Constable Velkin speaking.
Synchro Alarms here?
Yes?
I'm worried about our serviceman. I haven't heard from him since about 11:30. Well, I've tried to raise him and I can't. And he hasn't reported in. I think there's something wrong.
Oh, the address of the premises, please?
Capricorn Discount Company, President Street. It's on the sixth floor.
All right, we'll send somebody right away.
Well, this is the address Cantel gave us. Can't understand why there's no night watch for them. Place is wide open. You got your torch?
Yeah, Sergeant.
Right. Let's see. That's better. Wait a minute. That doesn't look healthy, does it?
No, Sergeant.
What's that sticking out of his back?
It's a screwdriver, Sergeant.
Hold the light steady. Let's have a look at him.
Is he dead, Sergeant?
Not yet. Pulse is very weak, though. I'll stay with him. You tell Control what's happened and get him to send an ambulance.
All right, Sergeant.
2:25 a.m. The wounded, still unconscious serviceman is borne on a stretcher into the lift and descends to street level where an ambulance is waiting to receive him. Two CID men, Detective Sergeant Frank and Detective Constable Willemser, have arrived from John Forster Square to take charge of the investigation into the robbery and the attempted murder. Also on the scene, wearing a thick jersey and an overcoat on top of his pajamas, is the managing director of the Capricorn Discount Company.
Four times they phoned me. That's four times, including tonight. So, of course, I think it's another false alarm. And look at the place. Cleaned me out.
What happened to the night watchman? Surely you have one?
Yeah, disappeared. Should be on the door downstairs all the time.
Constable?
Yes, Sergeant?
Go downstairs and have a look around for the night watchman.
Right, Sergeant.
Yes, and if you find him, tell him he's fired. He can go.
After I've spoken to him.
Right, Sergeant.
I reckon you'll be needing this. This is what was sticking out of the serviceman's back.
Screwdriver.
I use my handkerchief.
Good. Thanks. We'll subject this to an intensive fingerprint search and microphotography. Might yield something.
Mr. Lazard?
Yeah?
You say you've been called out four times. What do you mean exactly?
Four times this week. Started on Sunday night, then again on Monday and on Tuesday. Last night I can sleep. But tonight they call me out again.
False alarms?
They all seem to be.
What caused the alarm to go off on the three previous occasions?
They thought it was a fault, but they were not able to find it.
Oh, I see. You think that the three false alarms had anything to do with tonight?
How should I know? But it seems funny.
Well, I'd be much obliged, Mr. Lazard, if you'd check your stock and let me know exactly what is missing.
All right, yes. I will go and phone my manager.
There's no hurry. In the morning, we'll do fine. I'm going down to see if Constable Willems has found your night watchman. Constable!
We're back here, Sergeant.
The night watchman.
I reckon so.
Can you wake him?
Well, that's what I've been trying to do ever since I found him. He's as drunk as a lord.
Did you find the bottle with him?
Yes, Sergeant.
Well, he's going to take some sobering up.
Any suggestions, Sergeant?
No, I'll leave that to you. I'm going up to the hospital, so there's no hurry. I'm anxious to talk to the burglar alarm man who is stabbed. He's probably undergoing an operation, so I won't be able to talk to him until he comes round from the anesthetic. If he comes round.
The detective sergeant is advised of the serviceman's condition on his arrival at the hospital by the doctor who performed the emergency operation.
He's a very lucky youngster. The screwdriver penetrated the chest cavity between the third and fourth ribs. It missed an important artery by a matter of half an inch.
Oh.
Had that been severed, he would have bled to death in a matter of a few seconds. Instead, the point of the screwdriver penetrated the left lung. It was a terrific blow he received with it. The wound was only just short of emerging from the patient's chest. It must have gone in up to the hilt. Yeah, the screwdriver, that is. Does it have a big handle?
Yes.
I thought so. The handle hit the spinal column between the third and fourth vertebrae. I very much fear that the damage there is much more serious than that sustained by the lung.
Meaning, Doctor?
The lower half of his body may well be paralyzed.
Do you feel well enough to answer one or two questions?
Yeah, okay.
Did you see who did it?
No, not properly. He was standing in the dock. I got out of the lift and I couldn't see, just having stepped out from the light.
Did you know there was somebody there?
Well, as soon as he spoke, I did.
What did he say?
I think he got a fright when the lift doors opened. He said something like, "What's that?" or "Who's that?"
Did you wonder who he was?
Yeah. I asked him who he was, and he said that Mr. Lazard had asked him to pop in on his way home from the bioscope.
So you presumed he was something to do with the business?
Yeah.
Did he actually use the name Lazard?
Yeah. That's what made me think everything was okay. Mm-hmm. You see, I'd been to the place three times this week with the old man, Lazard, there. But I'd never met any of the other staff there.
So it's someone who knows the Capricorn Discount Company well enough to be acquainted with the managing director's name. Any impressions of this man, the man who stabbed you?
Only that I seem to think he was tall. I don't know why.
Anything about the voice?
Yeah, I'd know it anyway. I'll never forget it.
What sort of voice was it? Rough? Well-spoken?
I don't know how you'd describe it. Quite a nice voice, really, I suppose.
This might sound odd, but was there any sort of distinctive smell associated with a man, say, an aftershave lotion?
No, I don't think so.
Anything else? Any other impressions?
No.
It's almost midday when Detective Sergeant Frank returns to the Capricorn Discount Company's premises.
Well, Constable Willemser.
He's feeling very sorry for himself, Sergeant, but he's well enough to talk to.
Where is he?
He's lying down in the yard here, Sergeant.
A silly fool. What's he had to say for himself?
Complains, mostly. Says he has too much bubble ass.
It certainly looks that way. How are you, my boy?
How about it? Bubbles.
No, I don't expect any sympathy here. What happened to you?
Too much pusa, my wife.
Yes, I know, but where did you get it from?
It's the big boss give it to me.
Which big boss?
That one was here before. Three times he's coming here.
When?
At night time, my boss.
What did he want?
He is here to look around. He promises much money at end of the week.
No, I think you had that. Did he tell you to drink this whole bottle of brandy?
Yes, my boss.
You're lucky a bubble ass is all you got. You could have died.
But,
hey, you've been a fool, my boy. Mr. Lazard is going to fire you.
The boss has already fired me, sir.
Didn't you know that the big boss, as you call him, was going to steal Mr. Lazard's property?
Yes, but they promised me much money.
They?
There's two others.
How did they come?
In the big van, boss.
Well, my boy, the bad news is that you're under arrest.
Me, my boss? Why?
You're an accessory before the fact. You helped the men.
Oh, boss.
Yeah, that's right. And all you've got for your trouble is a king-sized hangover.
Detective Sergeant Frank and Detective Constable Willemser sift the evidence at their disposal in a CID office at John Forster Square.
Three men with a van, a Bantu night watchman who could and will, if we ever find him, prove helpful at an identification parade.
And Desmond Faraday might be able to help us there as well.
He remembers that the man who struck him down had what seemed to be a nice voice. He had the impression that his assailant was a big man, whom the night watchman had never seen before this week.
And the same big man obviously knew that there was a Mr. Lazard attached to the discount company.
Yes, that seems significant.
Oh, there's the brandy bottle with the fingerprints other than those belonging to the night watchman.
And it bears the label of the bottle store from where it was purchased, the Albion in Bromfontein.
Now, that might be significant too, the area.
Did Mr. Lazard compile a list of the stolen stuff?
Yes, Sergeant, along with quantities and values. Here.
Oh, thanks. Detective Sergeant Frank.
Afternoon, Sergeant. Pretoria here, Bureau of Standards. We have a report on that screwdriver which was sent over here this morning. It's a Vulcan 8-inch, standard type, imported from America. No fingerprints.
Blast.
But when it was subjected to chemical tests, traces of animal fat were discovered.
Animal fat?
Yes. There was a considerable amount of it around the shaft and in the socket of the handle.
What sort of animal fat?
Beef and pork.
Then is the screwdriver from a butcher's?
That's what we thought at first, but if it were a butcher's screwdriver, wouldn't you expect to find mutton fat, too?
That's true. What about an abattoir?
Possibly, but they slaughter sheep, too.
Did your chemical tests reveal anything else?
Well, the source of the fat seemed to be the socket in the handle. We took the shaft out. There was a considerable deposit of animal tissue, none of it human. We've managed to isolate cows and pigs.
Is the tissue old or new?
Both.
Can you put a date on the oldest deposit?
Yes, a carbon test fixes it at 3 years.
And the newest stuff?
Just a matter of days.
All right, Mr. Cooper. Is that the lot?
Yes. Yes, I've already sent the screwdriver back to you.
Oh, thank you.
Cheerio.
You look worried, Sergeant.
I'm trying to figure out where and how a screwdriver would be used so you came into contact with beef and pork carcasses.
Butchers?
It's possible. Unlikely, though. No mutton fat. Same applies to an abattoir.
Well, what about a chef in a kitchen somewhere?
Same thing applies. There aren't many kitchens. I was going to say that don't have mutton or lamb about, but I suppose some of the plushier high-class restaurants would qualify. Would they?
Possible.
But a screwdriver, you don't cut meat with a screwdriver.
Oh, that's for sure.
Ah, cold storage place. Or a meat processing factory.
They handle mutton, don't they, Sarge?
There's one way to find out. Compile a list of all such firms on the reef and go visiting.
No, pork we don't have. We cash.
Yeah, we got all three. Beef, pork, and mutton.
We specialize in pork sausages and ham. Maybe a little bit of bacon sometimes. No beef.
Si, sir, no mutton here. We make a processed meat, salami, sausages, and ham.
Anybody else along the departures on manufacturers exactly what you do?
It's not that I know of. If there is, they're not big enough to be competition for us, eh?
Have you ever seen this screwdriver before?
How can I be sure? A screwdriver is a screwdriver, eh?
Which of your employees would use such a tool?
Electrician, maintenance man.
I wonder if you could arrange for me to see your men working unobserved.
Oh, see. When you want to do this?
This afternoon.
Sure.
The two detectives bring the Bantu night watchman Samson Buthelezi to the premises of Apollo Meat Processing Bravo Team. They stand in an office which overlooks the working area.
Not Pavalas now, are you?
No, my boss.
Right. I want you to look through this window and tell me whether you recognize anybody.
Yes, boss.
Oh? Well, go on, then.
Yes.
Well?
No, sir.
Oh, blast it.
Wait a minute.
Yes, what is it?
That one has just come in, the overalls, down beside the big machine. He is the one. He's promising me money.
Uh-huh. This one's name is a mayor. It's something of a comic. He get up and sing at the drop of a hat, eh?
What does he do around the place?
He's electrician.
Are you sure that's him, Samson?
Yes, my buddy. Most definitely.
Right.
Are you going to arrest?
No, we'll keep him under surveillance. That way, there's the chance of him leading us to the other two and the goods. Where does this mayor character live?
I can't tell you now, but tell you what, I'll go have a look in the records, huh?
A bottle of brandy ties up, Sergeant. The Albion bottle stores in Bronfontein, too.
And the singing would account for the nice voice.
Samson?
What?
You realize you could be making too much trouble for this man if you're mistaken.
No, I'm not mistaken, boss. He is the one. He gave me babalas and plenty nonsense.
See, I've got here. He's live in Melville.
Full address?
156 Second Avenue.
The address turns out to be that of a boarding house, as the two detectives discover when they visit the premises in disguise.
Yeah?
Routine check on the number of Bantu residing on the premises.
Oh. Now, let me see. There's three, I think.
Elsie, keep that kid quiet, man!
Can't hear yourself think someone's always racket going on.
Oh, where do they live?
Who, Elsie and the kid?
Oh, no, the Bantu.
Oh, out in the back.
Well, just go and have a look.
Yeah, help yourself. We've nothing to hide. I'll be upstairs if you want me.
What do you think, Sarge?
All that stuff that was pinched from Lazard's place was bulky. Van Leer stuff. It'd need a garage or something to hide it in. Let's go take a look.
Our building's as clean as a whistle, Sarge. But what about inside?
No, they wouldn't. A lot of stuff coming into a place like this would be seen and commented on. They wouldn't risk it. It's probably with one of Mayer's accomplices.
Now, how do we find out who they are?
Just keep Mayer under surveillance. He's bound to go calling sooner or later, or they'll call on him.
Five days later, Detective Sergeant Frank and Detective Constable Willemser are part of a squad of men commanded by Lieutenant Johan Vermeulen, detailed to raid an address in Lindmeyer.
Mayer's inside, is he?
Yes, sir. He arrived with another man.
Does the other man live here?
No, sir. The house is rented by some people called Tomaselli. He doesn't seem to work. He's always at home, sir.
All right, I'll knock at the front, and you and Detective Constable Willem, sir, cover the back.
Very good, sir.
Open up, police!
All set, Grunzer?
Yes, sir.
Can you see the windows on that side?
Yes. Come on, open this door.
Watch it. Here they come. All right. Police. That's enough. You're under arrest. Just stand where you are. Keep your hands well away from your sides. Frisk and Willem, sir.
All right, Sergeant.
Right, copper. Now let me go. You shoot and your man gets it first.
He's got me in an arm lock, Sergeant.
Come on, Mayer. Don't be a fool. This will get you nothing.
Get me away from you.
Watch it, Sergeant. He's got a gun.
And he knows how to use it, too.
Get down, Sergeant.
Now, drop that gun. Drop that gun. Do as I say, or your pal gets it.
But don't worry about me, Sergeant.
You shut your mouth.
Sir, round the back.
No! Nobody can help you, mister. You're going with me.
What's all the fuss here?
He grabbed Willems, sir.
But we don't want any trouble. Enough's enough.
Fool, we can all get away.
But for how long, Jack? Where do we go?
Come on with me. I'll see you right.
Not a chance. You've messed up the whole business. We can't even get rid of the stuff we've pinched.
Never mind that now.
It was very nearly a murder charge, Mayer. Don't do anything foolish now.
I don't think you're in any position to dictate to me. I'm leaving with our friend here. If there's any attempt made to follow, he gets it.
He's bluffing, sir.
No! Good, I told you to shut up. Now stand up straight and move. Nice and easy. Any attempt to come anywhere near me and this copper gets it. Come on, copper, you coming with
me? Oh, wait a minute.
No, Sergeant, he means it. Let him go.
Nice and easy now. Then nobody gets hurt.
Mayer forces the detective constable into the car parked at the front of the house.
What? Get him behind the wheel. Nice and easy. That's the idea. And I get in the back.
They'll come for you. They won't bother about me.
I hope for your sake that you're wrong. Now drive. Come on, let's go.
Well, where to?
Don't know yet. Just get us a long way away from here.
Anizer?
Well, get these two carols in the van and we'll arrange a reception party for Mr. Mayer.
Roadblock, sir?
Yeah.
What Mayer said didn't sound like threats to me, sir.
And do you have another suggestion?
I wouldn't worry about Constable Villain, sir, if I were you, sir. He's a very resourceful character.
Well, there's a soft street ahead. Where do you want me to go?
Turn left.
Right.
And don't try anything fancy. This gun's pointed at the back of your head.
You're being a fool. You know that, don't you?
Shut up and drive.
Left, you said?
That's right, and hurry it up. Hey, what are you doing? Why are you reversing?
You'll see.
The wall! My mind, where are you going? What the devil do you think you're doing?
happens so quickly. Detective Constable Willemser suddenly throws the car into reverse. Mayer, expecting the car to move forward and to the left, is thrown off balance. The motion of the car causes him to bang his head on the driver's seat. This gives Detective Constable Willemser the advantage he needs. Disregarding Mayer's shouts, he directs the car backwards at a high brick wall. After the inevitable collision, during which Mayer again hits his head and drops the gun he's holding, there's a sudden roar as spilt petrol ignites.
It's on fire!
Get out!
I can't, the door's jammed.
Come on, get out!
Don't leave me!
Come on, man, over the seats, come on, hurry up!
Give me your hand.
Here.
Pull it.
Come on, over!
I am.
The petrol tank will be going soon, for heaven's sake, hurry up!
There.
Come on your feet! Now run!
The blast of the explosion threw the two men onto their faces in the roadway. Neither was seriously hurt. Mayer was so shaken by the fact that he'd narrowly escaped death by burning that Detective Constable Willemser had no difficulty in effecting an arrest. At the subsequent trial, it was learned that Mayer had purchased goods from the Capricorn Discount Company. That was how he'd discovered the name of the managing director. He also took the opportunity of acquainting himself with the layout of the business. Samson Buthelezi, having turned state's witness, received a suspended sentence. The other three, Wilfred Brunt, Henry Lampton, and John Mayer, were sent to prison for periods varying between 3 and 10 years. The burglar alarm serviceman is in a wheelchair to this day. He will never walk again.
They prowl the empty streets at night, waiting. In fast cars, on foot, living with crime and violence. These men are on duty 24 hours out of every 24. They face dangers at every turn, expecting nothing less. They protect the people of South Africa. These are the men of Squad Cars. Listen again next Friday evening to another authentic story in our dramatic South African police series, Squad Cars, brought to you by General Motors,